Hello, everyone, and welcome to the latest edition of the Providence Journal's College Basketball Podcast. This is Bill Koch, sports writer for the Journal, from my Warwick home on this Friday morning. Could rain, could snow, could do just about anything outside my window. No idea. Looks a little unsettled. As I said last week, feeling more and more like winter with college hoops action heating up. Joined by my two usual co-conspirators. First, the sports director at WPRI and Fox Providence, Maury Hirschgordon. Maury, how we living, babe?
Living well. We are moving right along here through conference play and got a big couple weeks coming up.
Can't see it on the Zoom, but Maury's repping the Cuse this morning. He's keeping the faith with the orange. They are back on track and within NCAA striking distance. Might be too strong, but back on the radar, I think we could say.
Yeah, we needed that win the other night at Miami. That was a tough loss. But, yeah, there's definitely squads in our area that are positioned better than the old Cuse.
Certainly a couple at this point. Also joined by the sports director at ABC6, the weekend co-host of Cordishy and Coit on WEEI Providence. Nick Coit, ladies and gentlemen. Coity, how we living?
I like that Maury called it the old Cuse. I think that works in a couple of different ways, doesn't it?
Oh, God. Cordishy's in your ear too much.
No. I don't allow him in my ear. We got some things to bring up on Saturday. We got some things. Somehow, Scott is fine, unlike most of the rest of the American public, in listening to Tony Romo do a television broadcast. Because that guy drives me insane. I don't know about you guys, but he drives me insane.
Romo, I'd like to have his bank account. I'd like to have his golf game. Not necessarily sure about his recent media performances, but that's not necessarily mine to critique, I would say. Coit is rocking the Bruins beanie. The Bruins are a wagon at the moment. And we can only hope the same for the programs that we cover, because that means we would be deep into March and, running around on the college basketball trail to regional sites, men's and women's, as it turns out. But guys, we will start, I think, in Smithfield with something that happened Thursday night that was more important than the game, frankly. Kayvon Kramer returned for Bryant after a 7-week absence. This is a kid who was in an ICU in Cincinnati. In early December, battling an illness that turned into something much more testament to the powers of science, the powers of faith, the power of support from family and friends, and how much it can lift you. The Bulldogs beating NJIT 87-75. Kramer played 14 minutes in the game, had two dunks, three block shots. Looked like nothing ever happened. If you had no idea of his story, you wouldn't know that was a very sick kid not too long ago, and it did wonders for Jared Grasso, his players, and really everyone who was at the Chase Center, to see him out there looking healthy and vibrant.
Pretty awesome. It's a remarkable story. It's something we've been following. Bill, we've been asking Jared Grasso about it for weeks and weeks. How's Kayvon? And to finally see him out on the floor, it's remarkable. And not only is it a big lift for the team, but Kayvon is a real key piece to what you really wanted to do this year. Looking at his stat line last night, plays 14 minutes, which is great. Has 5 points, comes in, makes an immediate impact offensively. But Kayvon, I think, has been sort of slated into that Hall Elias role, because the thing that impressed me about the stat line of 14 minutes, he had three blocks last night. And that, to me, for Bryant is going to be key. I mean, he can really, really help them. So not only was it wonderful that he was on the floor and playing, and I think that's all anybody cared about, with Kayvon last night, was the fact that he was back. But not only that, he's going to be a real key guy in terms of where they want to go. And I think that's an even bigger lift to, the Bulldogs here.
Yeah, no doubt. It works twofold. It's the emotional boost, it's the emotional lift. Your team is whole once again. And then also everything that he provides out on the floor. Because as well as Antoine Walker has played, and he's the reigning American East Player of the Week, the Bulldogs still miss their five man. It allows them to be more versatile. They're a little bit deeper on the floor. And, with him back in the fold, they're going to position themselves, give themselves a chance to win a regular season championship if they can continue to improve.
Yeah, you could just see how much more athletic they were on defense, how much better they were at the rim with him out there. And I think they've missed that shot blocking from last year. They had Hall Elijahs and Greg Calixt, were two guys who were in the top 100 in terms of shot blocking rate individually on a national scale. And, they've only ticked down a little bit in terms of block shot percentage, but it is different. Presence is different in the lane. It diverts guards. It makes Big Ben think, maybe that extra half second before going to the rim aggressively. So having someone like Kramer in the lineup is really important. For folks who didn't follow the story, he had the flu. We asked him for some specifics about what happened, and he said he doesn't really remember. He was being treated at UC Medical Center after a December 4 loss at Cincinnati. Turned into something much worse. Speculation is probably had something to do with his respiratory system. When you're ill like that, you can develop any number of side effects and complications. And certainly they were monitoring him closely. He made really quick improvements. It's a testament to being young and receiving great care. I know 4 or 5 days later, Bryant beat Stony Brook at home. He FaceTimed with the team in the home locker room from his hospital bed. And what he said last night was after he hung up the phone, he cried, just from seeing his guys and missing them, and wanting to be back so much. And 2 weeks later, he was, just after Christmas. Came up to campus, was at practice, was able to get back around his teammates and, was ultimately cleared for workouts and, got it going pretty quickly. And I think it's, like I said off the top, it's just a testament to a lot of things. And, you have him back now. Bryant, I think it's a huge mental hurdle for them to clear. And I think it helps them going forward, into a weekend game against UMass Lowell, which will be a showdown between two of the top teams in America East.
BK, let me give it props here to the health professionals at the UC Medical Center.
Yeah, good
Cincinnati.
Point. Yeah.
The same place, the same group that helped save Damar Hamlin's life. I mean, everybody followed that story nationally. I mean, wow. whatever they're doing there, they're working wonders. So just a shout out to that place, that hospital. Medical professionals that, sometimes I don't think they get enough props, but the fact that they've had, now two stories like this that we've had some sort of connection to and been following, it's miraculous.
Yeah, it really is. And obviously you think about the role medical professionals play in our lives. I know Coit, your sister obviously is, on the medical front lines. And, I certainly have friends who are in nursing and who are doctors. And, you don't necessarily talk to them about their work every day, but you know that what they're doing is more important than what we're doing. Just out watching games and, trying to tell people stories. It really puts it in perspective. Just how important their function is in society, and it's something that we shouldn't take for granted for sure. So Bryant gives us a terrific story there on Thursday night, and gives us a team that we thought we would see from the start of the year. Kramer ended up missing 10 games and, ideally does not miss another one here down the stretch. Guys, I think we should go to Providence next, because they played Wednesday night in a game at Marquette. Two nationally ranked teams going at it in Milwaukee. The Golden Eagles had the answers in that one and left Providence winless on the road trip. You know, two game swing through Creighton and through Marquette. This was an 83-75 loss, a game in which Providence played from behind for the majority of it. You know, made a couple pushes in the second half, but you know, that's a tough venue and a tough team to try to be chasing uphill. You know, Marquette is a very good basketball team. They're picked ninth preseason in the Big East. They have defied those expectations. They will be an NCAA tournament team at this point. Guys, I you know, the way I wrote it Wednesday night for the Journal was it would have been nice to get one of these. You know, two very tough games, obviously, against good opponents. Would have been nice to split on the road. Ultimately, couldn't end up doing it. And that makes the next two home games coming up against DePaul and against Butler just that much, you know, that much more important as you get to the midpoint of the season here.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. I put this in my weekly column of WPRI.com that we're like at the 20, almost at the 20 game threshold here. And if you draw a parallel to a golf tournament, you know, day three is moving day. And it's moving time in the college basketball season. The next couple weeks will really set you up, or lack of success will really set you up, you know, for your stretch run in the end of February and in March. You're going to look back and be like, oh, you know, every team plays tough in February. Everybody knows that the following month on the calendar is March. But maybe you throw away these couple weeks. You know, you're coming out of a long winter break. You've got class that resumes. You know, college kids can sometimes get distracted. Archie Miller talked about this yesterday in his availability, that this is a really key point in the season. Your body starts to take a toll. You're in the middle of league play. You're potentially seeing teams a second time now. Scouting reports are a little bit more in depth. These next two, 3 weeks every year on the college basketball calendar are some of the most important and some of the least talked about, because this can really set you up. And that's really what it is for Providence at this point. You know, I was really taken away. The key thing I took away from both games and both press conferences with Ed Cooley is there's no panic. There shouldn't be any panic. He knows how good of a squad he has. And if at full strength, I think they do grab one of those two wins, not the end of the world, but as you approach that midway point in the Big East schedule, knowing you haven't played Xavier at all, knowing you still have to go on the road at UConn, yeah, you have to take care of DePaul at home Saturday, Butler at home, and then you know you go to a Villanova team that's sort of middling right now. So if they can get to 8-2 at the halfway point of their 20 game slate, it will position themselves not only to continue to firm up their spot in the bracket come March, but it'll also, you know, we'll continue to get closer and closer to the day where maybe we can talk about repeating as regular season Big East champs. You know, Ed Cooley talks about it all the time. You don't want to get swept by any team. And that wasn't that hasn't been the case so far. And Marquette and Creighton were also coming off of tough losses. They were the more desperate team at home. You have some things going against you in terms of your health. Marquette's, you know, obviously had Dwayne Wade in the building, and if you watch the game, they honored their 2003 Final Four team 20th year anniversary. So it was just the makings for a tough, you know, stretch. We knew that going in, and Providence fell short.
Well, you said it, Maury. Home games are so important. It has been so difficult in the Big East to win on the road, and I mean the best road win now is probably what DePaul the other night at Xavier. Because before that, I can't remember where I saw it, but somebody was pointing out on social media, like the best road win that we had seen like early on in Big East play. And this may have changed now, but like Providence winning at Seton Hall was one of the top road wins of the season.
Yeah.
Because teams have not been able to go on the road and get these sorts of games. And so, you know, it's a tough pair of losses. You know, like you said, if Jared Bynum's on the floor, you know, maybe you grab one of those. Ed Cooley said they sort of lacked, you know, synergy and chemistry, which I think was apparent at times. It was a little spotty, you know, at Marquette. You know, obviously not having Alan Breed in practice the way they wanted to. Jaden Pierre dealing with illness, that contributed to it. Home games are going to be really, really important. It starts with DePaul. They're riding high right now after beating Xavier. But you got to get them at home. You got Butler at home. You know, win these pair of next two, take care of business, and see what you can do. If you can steal a road game, you still have Xavier on the road, you have UConn on the road. You know, if you can steal one of those, you know, that would be huge in terms of building your case. But really, I think we said it, guys, like they started out so well with Big East play that, you know, if you're going 500 down the stretch here, you're going to get into the tournament comfortably. You are. And I know that, you know, you have the goal of repeating as the Big East champs, and that's absolutely, you should have that, particularly because you started so well in Big East play. But, you know, look, if there's some bumps in the road, you know, here, you know, they're going to be fine. And Ed Cooley keeps saying it too. You're right. They're a really good basketball team. He keeps saying it. Marquette beat a really good basketball team. Creighton beat a really good basketball team. He likes what he's got. And that's important too, because I think he knows when it's all together, when it's all whole, you know, the ceiling for this team is pretty high.
What he has at full strength is pretty good. And obviously Providence has not been there the last three or four games. Let's reset the health situation for them. First, Jared Bynum missed his third straight the other night. You know, he's dealing with an abdominal issue. You know, he's day to day. Ed Cooley, you know, hasn't given too much information on his status, and understandably so, because that's a really important player and, you know, affects, you know, everything that they do on the court. You know, Jaden Pierre was battling illness. He was limited at Creighton, as was Corey Floyd. And they shared their germs with Alan Breed, who didn't practice for a couple days leading into Marquette. And you could see in that game, I think, the other night, you know, Providence was outclassed in the backcourt in that game. Tyler Kolick, Carmelo native, was terrific. Again, he's a KenPom MVP in that one. 19 points, 6 rebounds, 6 assists, only 2 turnovers. He's 8-for-8 at the line. 6 of those makes are in the last 30 seconds. He's shooting out the game. You couple that with the 29 points he had in the first meeting against Providence. He has really hurt them in 2 games this season. The killer shot was by Cam Jones in the corner, off an inbounds play. Ed Cooley said that was game, set, and match with about 2 minutes to go. Providence has it down to 5. They're able to push it down to 5 on a couple of occasions, but they lost Cam Jones on an inbounds play. Alan Breed didn't get out to him. He's wide open for 3. Kolick is thinking quicker than everybody else on the floor, and that's the killer. Pushes it back to 8. You know, and Providence really misses Jared Bynum. And you know, I think more so than as a ball handler, you know, because he did have 16 and 8 rebounds in the double overtime win against Marquette. But I think more with his presence, and also with the fact that he's able to threaten some other guards for minutes. You know, Corey Floyd isn't necessarily ready to play both ways at this point. Jaden Pierre, coming off illness and still a freshman, isn't necessarily ready, you know, to contribute every night in the Big East. And so you're left with Alan Breed, Noah Locke, Devin Carter in the backcourt. Devin Carter was good in this game, and Alan Breed gave you what he could. But Noah Locke had a tough night. You know, he's 2-for-11 in the first half, you know, was missing shots. You know, shoot or shoot, I understand that. But what Jared Bynum's presence in the lineup did over the first, you know, 15 games or so, was it gave Ed Cooley a threat to bring Alan Breed off the bench if Noah Locke just decided, hey, I'm just going to shoot whenever I want. You know, coaches talk about competition for minutes and keeping players honest in that way. It's about more than just rest. It's about more than just versatility. It's, hey, I better play the right way and I better play a complete game or else I'm not going to play my 25 minutes. You know, Noah Locke's got 5 points, 3 rebounds, no assists, 1 turnover in this game, and he's getting bullied by Tyler Kolick off the dribble in the second half. You know, we've talked about this before. If he's not making shots, he's got to make some other kind of meaningful contribution to this lineup. That did not happen the other night. And you could see backcourt play was a huge difference in this game.
Yeah, no doubt. And Locke has definitely stepped up his game of late. And I think that's a big reason why they got off to the 6-0 start. You know, he has the 17 against UConn at home. He's got the 20 against St. John's when they really needed it in the first game without Bynum. so you know, in the last few, you had you saw some of that shot making ability, and you know, for the season though, he's under 35% from three, and you know, this is a guy in his career that came in. Let's pull it up here as I'm talking. Career, he's you know, 30, a little over 38. So yeah, if he's not making shots, Ed Cooley and Noah have talked about the added defensive improvement that he's made, and also just the belief that he can do it, where maybe in his first couple stops in his college career, he was never tasked with defending at the level that PC's asking him to. But, you know, he's got a night off. And sometimes that's what happens. Sometimes the shots don't fall. Took, you know, many good shots, I would say. But you know, when the ball doesn't go through the rim and you're shorthanded without Bynum, you know, it's tough to beat a team like Marquette on the road, with just, you know, pretty much three scores on the night.
Guys, thinking about, you know, if today the Big East season ended, who's your player of the year? And is Tyler Kolek up there?
Well, I mean,
player of the year. He's definitely popped in a few games, no doubt. I don't know about player of the year.
But think about it. I mean, like the contribution that he's made, how good Marquette's been. He's the straw that stirs the drink. I mean, he's been darn good. He's been darn good. I think he's first team, right? If you're doing Big East, all Big East teams right now.
He's definitely one of the best guards in the conference, no doubt.
Yeah.
He's a first or second team guard with Sule Boom. I just don't know if he scores the ball enough and makes as much of an impact on both ends like other guys in the conference.
I think you're looking at really tough competition for places in that way. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, and this is where we should note that Bryce Hopkins is one of the 50 nominees for the Oscar Robertson Trophy. That was released on Thursday. Five Big East players on that list. Sule Boom is another guard from Xavier who's been a real impact transfer. Joel Soriano, center for St. John's. Adama Sanogo, center for UConn. I'm leaving one player off. I knew I was going to do that. I should have pulled up the release, and I did not. Ryan Kallbrenner.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Center for Creighton. You know, so you're looking at those guys. You know, certainly you'd be looking at you know, impact guys in the league. I mean, could Xavier make a case to have two? Jack Nungy's having a really good year. Could Creighton make the case to have two? Baylor Shireman's having a very good year as a transfer from South Dakota State. You know, certainly there are other players that teams would want to argue for. But to Coit's point, Kolek has put himself in that mix. He was the A-10 rookie of the year at George Mason. And I mean, I've confessed this before on the pod, and I'll say it again. I thought Tyler was a very good player in high school. I did not see this guy. Did not see him turning into this.
Yeah.
He's one of the best players in one of the best leagues in the country. And now I wonder, you know, honestly, where he could take this thing going forward. He's already made this much of a jump from when he was at Cumberland High School to now. You wonder where he's going to be in 4 or 5 years.
Yeah, I do have to say, I put a little more to Court's point. I put a little bit more stock in players on winning teams than I do that are good stat bad team, good stat guy on a bad team type of player. I just don't know if he scores the ball enough. But yeah, I mean, in terms of them being a half game out of first place as we approach the midway point in the season, and being one of the most important players on that team, that definitely, I think, warrants potential first team all league consideration, if not second team at the worst. I mean, yeah, I think he's the first or second best point guard in the conference right now.
And that's why I asked the question, because I just, to me, what you said, Bill, is why, because I just say, wow. I mean, just the improvement that he has made as a player all around. It's a great story. And it's a real tribute to him, to the guys like CJ Ward that work with him, that have made him a better player. You know, like That it's really, it's a great story. And the fact that we're talking about Tyler in that sort of conversation and that sort of context is, yeah, it's a real tribute to him. You know, I don't have the answer. I'd probably go with Boom at, you know, Xavier. You know, if I was picking a player of the year right now, but it's Tyler, you talk about him for it because, you know, Hopkins is obviously in the conversation with Providence. You know, but just the fact that he's up there, it's pretty remarkable.
Yeah, you look at Hopkins through 19 games, he's leading Providence in scoring, rebounding, field goals made, free throws made, minutes played, defensive boards. He's within striking distance of averaging a double-double. You know, what an impact player.
Yeah.
He's played 30 minutes in 16 of his 19 games. You know, this is a guy who couldn't get any run in Kentucky last year. And for whatever reason, I do not know. You know, you every once in a while you tweet something like that out and you've got Wildcats fans in your mention saying, well, we have this guy and we have this guy and we have this guy coming in. You know what else you have? You have an NIT berth right now, maybe, if you're lucky. You're nowhere near
Burn.
The NCAA tournament.
Burn.
At this point, I'm looking at the current Joe Lunardi bracketology, which just came out about 5 minutes ago. Providence is a sixth seed. They will be playing in Denver. Let's go.
That's a good spot.
That's one of the regional places we like to see.
Let's go.
Kentucky is not in the field. You know, so their loss continues to be Providence's gain. Bryce Hopkins has been superb. He had another double-double the other night against Marquette. Pack that guy in ice and have him out there in one piece to play DePaul for that Saturday tip. That's at 2 p.m. at the Amp. Yeah, I know Providence was looking forward to playing at home. Students back? Anyone have an idea?
With the Friars?
Yeah.
I mean, I would think they are because the semester, I mean, look, it's not PC, it's URI, but we start our semester Tuesday. So I would think the kids are back. It's been a long winter break. So I think they're back.
Okay, because sure. As we know, if the students are there and adequately prepared, quote fingers, they make a big difference in that building. Ed Cooley on his post-game Zoom the other night at Marquette was asking for a big crowd, you know, asking for that home support, and I think he's going to get it.
I think so, too.
Yeah, because I think folks will be excited to have the Friars back and in action. You know, Saturday we'll also see a road trip for the URI women, who I watched on Wednesday night beat Richmond. And, you know, that's becoming a very familiar result in Kingston when it comes to Tammy Reese's crew. 75-49 over Richmond. This is a one-point game with 3 minutes left in the second quarter, and then the wagon got started. And that's what they are right now. 15-3 overall, 6-0 in the A-10, the only unbeaten team in that league. UMass is the only one loss team in that league, and URI gave that loss to them on the road. You know, and just looking at the Rams, you know, if we're going to have a second or a third NCAA team out of the state, if you assume that Providence's men are going to get there and Bryant's men have a shot in America East, the URI women are right there in terms of their March prospects at this point. They're on the fringes in terms of at-large consideration, but they look like the team to beat in the Atlantic 10. I know Tammy is pushed back against that. She likes UMass. She likes St. Joe's. But the way they performed on the floor, it continues to look like they are the team that everybody else is going to have to reckon with.
No, and they hit, 11 threes the other night. You know, their depth shows. You know, it was, you know, some of the girls coming off the bench that really helped to spark them. You know, gosh, a girl like a Sophie Phillips, she can really shoot the ball. Man, it's this team has really come along. You know, they've got a lot of players that can contribute. There's just a huge confidence with them. Yeah, they're really impressive, Bill. And I love what you wrote the other day. You know, and I didn't get to listen to it. I actually want to listen back to it today. The Tammy Reese's Coaches Show. I mean, think about all the steps that this program is taking to, you know, gain the attention, gain traction. And they deserve it because, you know, Tammy is, she's got a great program right now that was competitive the last couple of years, really competitive this year, obviously. And, yeah, we're talking about bracketology with the URI women. I peeked at it the other day and I think it had them in, Blacksburg, Virginia, which would be interesting. So yeah, it's, they were impressive the other night, but they've been impressive and that's because they got a lot of players contributing.
Yeah, they play Sunday. I just checked the pocket schedule. I was wrong. They play Sunday at St. Bonaventure in lovely Olean. You know, if we think the forecast here is bad, you know, watch out for lovely Olean. It can be tough this time of year.
How long is the drive from Buffalo?
From Buffalo, it's about you know, anywhere between an hour and a half west.
Okay.
You know, it is Western New York. You're talking about pretty much halfway through Pennsylvania, north of there. You know, you're probably equidistant from Philadelphia and Pittsburgh. That's about where Olean is. It is out there. It is out there.
Yeah.
Made that trip a couple times. You know, in the winter for basketball, it is a tough one. I'm sure in the summer it's beautiful. You know, all the locals say that there's great golf and obviously lakes and fishing and camping and anything else that you could want in the outdoors. It's a really clean part of the country. But when you go in the winter and especially for a men's game at the Riley Center, they have great loyal fans who show up, you know, who know how to pregame for sure. You know, one of the better environments in the A-10. Not necessarily for the women right now. St. Bonaventure fired their coach midseason. I think they beat Dayton the other night, but they are one of the worst teams in the league. You know, shouldn't really threaten the Rams, but you know, they're not looking past anyone, and that is typical of good programs. You would expect them to take care of business there. You know, in that game, you know, Maury, just thinking about URI women and you know the fact that they managed to turn this into something from an attendance perspective. They're second in the league right now, total home attendance. You know, I think they are third in average. VCU nips in front of them for second. Dayton is first in both categories. Obviously, Dayton was in the Elite Eight a few short years ago and has great fans, but you know, the fact that they've built this, you know, I know you've been here the whole time that Tammy has been here. Just the way that she's put this program on the map, can you speak to, you know, how they've been able to do this, sort of this slow climb and that's all of a sudden, you know, just taken off and blasted off here?
Well, she's relatable, Bill. That's what she is. She's relatable. She's down to earth. You know, I know a number of people that get down there night in and night out with season tickets, whether it's, you know, alumni or just, you know, people in the state that like good basketball. I think it's just a number of factors at play. I think, you know, first is she's relatable and she's a great businesswoman, a great saleswoman of her program. She's had success that she brought from her time at Syracuse when they went to the national championship. She knows how to recruit and get talent. That's obvious. And then I think it also doesn't hurt that the men's program is on the upswing, but caught in a little lull that has sort of, you know, coincided with her program taking off. So, you know, when you combine all of those factors and you look at it, you know, why wouldn't you want to go support a program that, you know, there's a good chance you're going to go see a win, you know, night in and night out at the Ryan Center. And they play in a good league. You see a number of different teams, a number of different styles. The league has been pretty successful and has had different teams atop the league, you know, over the course of the last decade or two. But now it's URI's turn under Reese, and you know, you start the coach's show, and you know, tickets aren't super expensive. It's a pretty cheap night out for a family of four. So you know, why not take a ride down to the Ryan Center and watch them?
Yeah, good points, and certainly a game that you'd want to put on your calendar, February 1st against St. Joe's. That's her next home date. You know, could be 8-0 at that point. You know, that could be a game where they could take a 3-game lead over St. Joe's, you know, at the top of the league. And, you know, even though the conference tournament's on a neutral floor, you do want to secure that one seed. You want to be able to pick your opponent. You know, maybe you want to avoid UMass or St. Joe's until the final. You know, if they finish second and third, you let them beat up on each other in a conference semifinal, and, you know, you get what's left over in a conference championship game in Delaware on that first weekend in March. You know, but certainly something to watch over the next 5 or 6 weeks or so, whether or not they can secure a second NCAA bid in program history. The first was back in 1996 and really is an outlier if you look at you know, their history. This has not been a winner over a long period of time, and she has made it one you know, in very short order. You know, quick look at the URI men, who are going to be at home for three straight now, starting on Saturday with George Mason. Lost the last two road games, the most recent 64-57 at Richmond. You know, guys, I think it looked familiar. You know, I caught it on the rewatch on ESPN Plus, and they try to do the right things. I think the effort is there. But just on too many nights, they're just not good enough offensively. You know, not good enough to threaten you in the front court, really. You know, not good enough in terms of their shooting. You know, it's difficult. They are limited in several ways. And, you know, the most glaring one is trying to put the ball in the basket. You know, you look the other night and you've got two players in double figures. Breon Freeman has 18 points. Ishleget has 13, but he needs 15 shots to get there. No turnovers, protected the ball in 34 minutes, you know, but just could not get shots to fall at the rim, you know, and nobody else had more than six, you know, no secondary scoring, you know, no bench scoring in that way. You know, it's just very difficult, I would imagine, for them to sustain effort when, you know, they're not getting that reward of seeing the ball go through the basket and getting wins. You know, and certainly I know they look forward to the homestand with George Mason coming in. You have Dayton coming in on Wednesday, one of the preseason league favorites. That'll be Archie Miller against his former program, and then LaSalle next weekend. But you know, Rhodey from that stretch, you know, just continues to struggle in familiar ways.
Yeah, they're trying to figure out how to win consistently, and make the winning plays down stretches. And, you know, they don't, you know, it is when Breon's not scoring, they don't have that guy that just consistently is like the scorer, you know. They have to really grind it out in terms of finding their offense, I think. And no, but you're right. I think Coach Miller has been very upbeat about his team the last like month, because he feels like they're taking the coaching, they're seeing what are the winning plays and the things they need to do. Sometimes it's working out for them. They've shown the ability to do it at times, particularly at home. They've won their last four home games, so being home this weekend, I think, will really help them. But you know, it's off and on. It's off and on. And these are sort of the growing pains that this program's going through. You know, it helps to have guys that they're trying to establish a culture this year. And I think that is working. And I think that's why Coach Miller has been, you know, so upbeat, is that he has guys like Ishleget, like Malik Martin. Those guys are taking the coaching, establishing a culture, and saying this is how things are going to run here. And so I think that's a huge thing in terms of what they're trying to do, you know, this year. I know they want to get results, and they're still, it's any season, you want to think about results and seeding down near the A-10 tournament time and whatever, but you know the building blocks that you're trying to build on this year. And you know, the more wins they can get, the better, and being home is going to help.
Yeah, we talked about this with him at the beginning of the season, talking about the lack of talent and how you make up for that and how you make up for going through lulls on offense for long stretches, it seems like, or very frequent stretches throughout a season. And that's controlling the glass, controlling turnovers. And they're just not physical enough. And I appreciate Archie's honesty the other day in his availability, talking about, you know, the number one thing that they need to do better is controlling the glass, is be the more physical team, because you have to make up in so many different areas when you have the lack of scoring. I heard Matt Painter, the head coach of Purdue, who's top five team in the country, the other day on MLK Day. They pulled one out at the Breslin Center over Michigan State in a game that you know, Michigan State probably ended up deserving to win, but Purdue pulled it out. And he said, you know, I tell my team all the time, you have to be 10 points better on the road. And URI will never be 10 points better on the road against the team in conference play because of their lack of talent. And that's to no one's fault. That's just where the program is right now. And Archie Miller was very honest about where his program is. And in order to make up, you know, those lulls on the offensive end, they need to bring it. I think being at home, you know, home court advantage can give you maybe a bucket or two in terms of being familiar with the gym, not having to travel, having your home crowd behind you, so on and so forth. I think, you know, when we look at it, URI's home slate will end up being better than their road play. They've won four straight at home. However, you know, it's just a struggle. It's just a slog, and we don't watch practice. We're not behind the scenes. It's good to see, and it's good to hear that Archie Miller's happy with the way his team has responded to the coaching and to the new style. And it seems like they really took a turn around holiday break time when they could lock in on just basketball, no schoolwork after the first semester. You know, you just hope they get a few results at home so that they keep staying with it. Because it's all nice and well to hear flowery comments and to hear that your team is practicing hard and has the right habits now, and the culture starting to change, and they're getting the leadership they need. But at the end of the day, you know, it's, if we have the same conversation in 4 weeks and they're riding a, you know, 8-game losing streak, you know, who knows what'll happen at that point if Miller's the same way. But it really seems like he cut the year in half. All right, we got that non-conference portion out of the way. Let's start a brand new season during that COVID pause when the game against Milwaukee got canceled. Let's start right now. And right now they're 2-4. They you know, had a chance to be 3-3 at this point. And I think that's sort of where we expected them to be, around 500, maybe not quite at 500. But if you lose a couple one-possession games and you finish 7-11, you know, you had the opportunity right there to be at, say, 9-9.
Yeah, and the players need it. You know, the coaches can take a long-term view. They're mature. They're the adults in the room, and they can look at it and say, well, you've made, you know, incremental gains. I watch you every day. You know, I can tell that you're a better player. But the players look at the scoreboard. They look at the record at the end of the season. They're looking at it now at 6-12. You know, I don't know if the players are on KenPom, but you go on there, there's a lot of red numbers on there, which is not good. Green is good on KenPom.com. Red is not so good. You know, the offense category is very red. The defense category is reddening a little bit in certain spots, you know, particularly in terms of forcing turnovers and offensive rebounds given up. You know, so... Yeah, it's difficult. I mean, this is watching the sausage be made in real time, and it's not always pretty in that way. You know, and you hope you or I can find something. Next week, the students will be back on campus. You know, and I know the Dayton game was part of the mini plans that were sold preseason, the 5-game mini plans. So you would think that there's going to be a good crowd for that one. You know, Dayton looks pretty good. Aside from that home loss to VCU the other night, which was a shocker, you know, game that they threw away down the stretch. You know, Dayton's got premier players, you know, Deron Holmes the second, Tumani Camara, those are two of the best guys in the league. They will give URI a serious challenge next Wednesday. But first, George Mason on Saturday. That's a noon tip. TV for that one. Let's take a look. Looks like ESPN Plus for that game. You know, guys, I know you were both at Brown on Thursday. I was sorry to miss out on availability with the Bears. Split their last two games. You know, could have won them both. You know, had a thriller at home against Princeton. You know, won it on a last second jump shot by Keno Lilly Jr. He was the Ivy League Player of the Week for his performances against Princeton and then against Yale, a road game that, you know, Brown had tied going in the last minute, missed a critical front end of a 1-1 at the foul line and ended up losing to the Bulldogs 81-75. That's their most recent action. You know, guys, just looking at Brown, I thought it was critical to beat Princeton. You had to get a split in those first four home games. You lost the first two, and you're able to battle back and win the next two. I thought that was really important. You know, the Yale game was there for the taking at the end. Paxson Wojcik is at the line in a 75-75 game. He misses the first free throw. Nana Owusu-Anani fouls out in the offensive rebounding action. It was just a really unfortunate series of events just on one play. And it put Brown behind the eight ball for the last minute or so. But they were right there with the Bulldogs in that game. You know, and certainly I think by beating Princeton at home, by handing the Tigers their first loss, they put themselves in a position where they are still firmly in this Ivy League race as they go into the weekend and a 2 p.m. tip on Saturday against Columbia.
Yeah, it helps. You need to win home games here. You know, and we talked about it with Providence, but, you know, same with Brown, and particularly because the Bears have had a lot of home games to start, and you're going to be going on the road here for a long stretch in the Ivy League. And so this Columbia game's important. You know, win it, you're 3-3. And the thing I think Mike Martin keeps saying, and I think it's good, is that, you know, whatever happens with certain games, if there's a loss here, you know, he said it with the Harvard game. He's saying it now with the Yale game. Like, you can't get it back. Can't get it back. You gotta learn from it. You know, Bears obviously could have had that game at Yale. Really would have put Yale in a huge hole. They would have been 1-4 in the league. So, you know, look, it's a missed opportunity, but there's plenty of them coming up. And so, you know, you got to take care of business against Columbia. Got to take care of business and then see what you can do on the road. You know, but with this Bears team, you know, I like the way that they play defensively. There's a lot of great effort there. And I think that travels, you know, that which will help you on the road. You know, Keen Lilly Jr. has really turned himself into a creative scorer. That helps, you know, even at a young age, even as a sophomore. So yeah, I think it'll be interesting when they go on the road. You know, their front court depth, you know, that needs to show up. Nana Owusu-Anani, I think, has been really good in Ivy League play so far. You know, another young guy that's taken a step forward. So, you know, there's been times where they've made the winning plays. There's been times where they haven't, but you can't get those times that you haven't back. You just got to look forward, and Brown's right in the mix. They're right in the mix. If you look at the Ivy League standings, that fourth spot right now, if they were to have Ivy Madness today, Yale, Harvard, Brown, Penn, all 2-3. So, you know, take care of business, like I said, at home against Columbia, and then see what you can do. Go game by game here, because you're right in the mix.
Yeah, Keno Lilly Jr. is without a doubt a first team all league Ivy, you know, Ivy selection if the season ended today. He's probably the third best player in the state behind Bryce Hopkins and Devin Carter, I would say. Just super efficient. And I asked him about that yesterday. I mean, it's one thing to average a lot of points. It's another thing to be, you know, efficient at his size. He's very particular in the types of shots he takes, where he takes them on the floor and what situations, doesn't get caught up in, you know, having the ball in his hands with 6 seconds left on the shot clock and having to force up tough J's. However, with this Brown team, I just, you look at the standings, they are right in it. However, they're battling the injury bug going forward. And you had the first part of your schedule was so home weighted that can you sustain this on the road? So if you can get Columbia, you're 3-3, six of your first 14 are done, but five of those six were at home. now 6 of your last 8 are on the road. And the conversation that we just got over having about URI is, you know, can Brown go be 6 to 9 points better on the road than the other team? Because a lot of the times those 50-50 games on the road go to the home team for whatever reason, you know, whether it's a home crowd or a home call or whatever. So as much as it looks like Brown's in the mix, I just don't know if they'll be there in a couple weeks. They certainly have a chance, and they've played well when they've been down a man or two, whether that's at Bryant or whether that's at Yale. Kaluani goes out and Wusuanane gets in foul trouble, and you know, Aaron Cooley looks like he did on December 1st in Smithfield. But yeah, they're really going to have to go small now. You know, Dan Friday might have to play some four. So it's going to be a rough road ahead, no doubt. But, you know, I guess year in and year out, Mike Martin's squad is always there at the fringe. Just you needed an extra win or two at this point.
Yeah, big minutes off the bench against Yale for Dan Friday. He played 27. Landon Lewis, freshman, played 22. Guys, did Mike give an update on Kaluanya?
No update on him. We know Malachi is out, so that's definitely one where they'll be shorthanded for a while. You know, Kaluanya obviously did not return against Yale. Mike didn't give an update on Anya's status, but if he didn't return against Yale, you know, who knows about his status going forward.
And Malachi Nadir has a knee injury. You know, it's looking like he could miss the rest of the season. You know, might be able to scrape his way back for the last game or so, but, you know, not necessarily looking good for him over the next few weeks. Kaluanya played the first minute against Yale. Looked like he suffered a hand injury on the replay. You know, not necessarily sure how severe it was or what happened. You know, but like you said, Maury, did not come back in that game. And, you know, you would assume that if it was a jammed finger or a dislocation or something like that, he would have been back out there. You know, so you wonder what that might be long term. You know, whether or not it's something that he'd be able to play with or play through, you know, or something that's going to sideline him going forward, because that would be a big loss for Brown. You know, he's obviously showed real upside as a freshman, you know, could be a double-double guy in the future. You know, someone who's very athletic, who can guard a little bit on the perimeter at 6'6", 6'7". You know, and that'll put big pressure, as you guys said, on Dan Friday, you know, on Landon Lewis inside. You know, you're going to have Kimo Ferrari out there a little bit more with Keno Lilly, which is a small lineup. You know, but Brown really has no choices, and you know that Mike is probably going to be able to piece something together here. You know, he is respected by his peers in terms of X and O ability, and you just wonder if his guys are going to be able to perform. That starts with Columbia on Saturday, 2 p.m. tip at the Pistola Center. You know, guys, a couple things nationally I wanted to hit on. First, Mike Bray stepping away at Notre Dame. You know, a few folks termed it as a retirement. I did not read the press release that way. I think this is a mutual parting. Mike Bray's been at Notre Dame for 23 years. He's made a couple Elite Eights. He is in his early 60s, and I think he, similar to Jay Wright, is someone who appreciated the traditional format of college basketball and college sports before the transfer portal, before NIL. Recruit your guys, coach them, develop them, you know, turn them into good players, potential pros, good citizens. We saw him do that with one local guy, Bonzi Colson, who certainly ended up being a great player at Notre Dame. You know, someone who wasn't necessarily recruited, you know, at an elite national level, but somebody who everybody would have wanted by the end of his career in South Bend. You know, that's another big opening on the carousel, guys. You know, and I know that's something that we talked about earlier. You know, you're looking at places like Georgetown potentially opening, Texas potentially opening. You know, Kentucky's righted the ship here over the last week, winning at Tennessee, but you know, John Calipari still under pressure in Lexington. You know, you take Notre Dame, a big-time ACC job, throw that into the mix, you know, it's going to be interesting times when the season ends in March and into April.
It's a lot of career wins for Mike Bray. What is that? I think seventh most among coaches, either active or something along those lines. It's a lot. He's done a tremendous job. He's, you know, coach talent that's gone on to the league. Guy I think of that, you know, I followed a little bit when my career in media started as an intern, was Pat Connaughton, another local guy, went to St. John's Prep, ended up playing at Notre Dame, was, you know, part of some of those successful teams, successful runs, now obviously plays with the Milwaukee Bucks. It's, boy, we're going to have an interesting offseason with all the schools and the job openings and whatnot. And there are some really big jobs up for grabs, and that's yet another one. And you're interested to see where some of these schools go in terms of their hires with, you know, with a position like Notre Dame, and getting probably younger at that position, as a head coach, and finding somebody that, you're right, is probably, you know, more, you know, ready to handle the modern college basketball world with transfer portal and NIL, because those are such key parts of the job now.
Yeah, I think Bray's vastly underrated. I was surprised that when I was looking up yesterday, talking to a few friends, like, Notre Dame isn't even a top 50 budget for hoops in the country. And when you leave the Big East, for him to get to back-to-back Elite Eights, pretty impressive. One thing I also saw was he also never won a regular season championship outright, whether that was at Delaware or at Notre Dame. So without having that top end talent, his program's sort of like a Villanova junior, develops guys are there 3 to 4 years. They've made some nice runs. No, they didn't break through and get to a Final Four, but he damn near beat that Kentucky team, that was undefeated. And he lost to, they got to back-to-back Elite Eights in 15-16. Anyway, cheers to him, on a great career. In terms of like who we could be looking at to replace the job, I think they have to go mid-major coach. It's not a program steeped in enough tradition, like a Kansas, North Carolina, Duke, Syracuse, where you're going to get pressure from boosters to stay in the family. I think that if this was a couple of years ago, Porter Moser would have been a shoo-in. Midwest guy, he ends up at Oklahoma. Maybe Porter Moser takes a jump and says, you know what, you know, let me get out a couple years early, because, you know, the Oklahoma ship is sinking and sinking quickly. Maybe he takes that jump to Notre Dame. It's just not that attractive enough of a job, in my opinion, like, for Ed Cooley to even sniff. Georgetown and Texas are just leaps and bounds better, in terms of location, in terms of league they play in terms of money they can offer. There's so many things there, but, you know, I guess, if you look at it, maybe a guy like Pat Kelsey, who's doing a great job at College of Charleston, could be really good. But, you know, I think my gut would be Porter Moser at this point. If I was Notre Dame, you know, if you're looking at guys that realistically have a shot, sure, you can go call anybody. We've had this conversation about Kentucky. You can find anybody's cell phone number, but will they actually pick up? I think Porter Moser should be, you know, one of your top two or three choices.
Yeah. A couple other guys to look at: Martin Inglesby at Delaware, was a guy who was in the NCAA tournament last year. He is an alum. So certainly somebody who knows the program well, would have an affinity for it. He's in his mid 40s, Pennsylvania native who is winning with the Blue Hens right now. He could be somebody on the list. I also saw, you know, one of the national names, I think it might have been Dana O'Neill, threw out Micah Shrewsbury last night, who is currently at Penn State, doing a good job with the Nittany Lions. But, you know, realistically, how high are you going to climb in the Big Ten if you're at Penn State? And to that point, Maury, you bring up Ed Cooley. He's got a better job with respect to his conference right now. Notre Dame is much more difficult to win at in the ACC, and when you add in that budgetary constriction, which I did not know, that's a really good point. Coaches certainly look at that. How do we spend with respect to our peers? You know, what's my area to recruit within a 50-100 mile radius from my campus? You know, South Bend, Indiana's got a ton of players. You can get into Chicago. You know, you can get into the Midwest. You know, but if you are not spending in a certain way, you know, and if you don't have NIL opportunities in a certain way, and if you are the clear second sport on campus, which you are at Notre Dame to football, it is a different pitch that the coaches are making. The football players are the star athletes there. They will get the best opportunities to make money off the floor. It will not be the basketball team. You know, so that is an excellent point. I don't consider Notre Dame a threat for Ed Cooley at all. And honestly, yeah, I'd be surprised if they hired a high major coach who, you know, really made a splash. I think Porter Moser is an interesting one. And I think that if this had happened 2 years ago, he would have strolled from Loyola to Notre Dame, you know, wouldn't have bothered with Oklahoma. That was a strange move at the time when he made it. I didn't really understand it. I'm sure they threw a bunch of money at him, and he said, well, this is my shot. I have to take it. It's generational wealth for my family. You know, but Oklahoma trying to win in the Big 12 is really brutal. You know, if you look at the way that conference stacks up and the fact that Oklahoma is going to leave for the SEC, which is going to be even harder as you get into the mid 2020s. So that'll be interesting to watch, certainly, you know, as we go forward. Put that on your calendars for a couple months from now when that really starts to heat up in terms of the coaching carousel. Either one of you guys have anything else? Did I miss anything?
I don't think so.
I mean, I'm certainly not perfect and don't claim to be. I'm sure I probably did.
I think we're all set. We got a got a big slate coming up Saturday. Got another game on Sunday, and a lot of home games now, which is good.
Yeah, nice to have home games for sure. You know, looking ahead to next week, and you've got you know, obviously Wednesday, you're gonna have PC Butler, you're gonna have URI Dayton, you know, which will be really interesting. You know, the best part, I think, though, is you're going to have students back on campus, and we're going to have these atmospheres the way they should be. You know, we get a little taste of it there in December, and now we'll get into the business end of the season. You know, it's going to be February before you know it, and that's, you know, obviously the month where, you know, I really get the juice flowing a little bit and start to think, you know, where am I going to go for a conference tournament? Am I going to book my hotels? Where am I going to stay? You know, those are the best conversations that you have with your bosses in this industry when you start to get on the road and, you know, start to get out there. Coit is laughing at me. Coit, what do you have?
One thing. Well, yeah, I'm about to send the, you know, budgeting email, just trying to map things out for coverage plans, which is always fun.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, looking forward to it. But you said students being back on campus. Kids, go to class. Okay? Go to class.
That's Professor
Coit has awoken.
Yep, Professor Coit is alive. Right. Here it comes.
Go to class.
Here it comes. Coit, give us the official pod recap of how your class did for a semester.
Yeah, great. Kids were great. Yeah, I very much enjoyed, you know, just having, you know, real conversations with them about the business, you know, the good side, the not so good side, you know, but they got their feet wet. It's an intro class. So intro to sports broadcasting, they got their feet wet with all the different mediums, with sports radio, with podcasting, with TV, with reporting, with all that kind of stuff. You know, one of the guests I had in class, I took the idea that Yanni Karakas had before me in the class, which was a mock press conference, put students in a scenario where they're asking questions in a press conference, and, URI women's coach Tammy Reese came by and answered some of their questions and did the mock press conference. And she was, tremendous, and gave them real great insight. So, you know, Maury talks about the relatability with Tammy. She took the time out of her day to come and talk to the students like that. That's very relatable, and it helped my cause immensely. So, yeah, great first semester. And now I got the roadmap. Now I know how it works. So hopefully it'll make me, hopefully I can just continue to show improvement, get better day by day, class by class, you know, and just continue to, you know, to improve and make progress and establish a culture, if you will.
Yeah. Any URI students we have listening, I think that's COM 204 or COM 210, right?
COM 204. You got it.
COM 204 with Professor Coit. Be careful though, because those mock pressers, I heard Coach Belichick showed up as well. Coach Belichick, nowhere near as nice or as warm and fuzzy as Tammy Rees at the podium. That's for sure. You know, Coach Belichick's a tough one.
I don't know what you're talking about, Bill. Very
impressive that you were able to get Bill to Kingston. I mean, really.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Yep. Don't know where you heard that.
No. No, it's just rumor mongering. It's what we do here, certainly. All right, gentlemen, as always, thank you for taking a little bit of time here as my co-conspirators. We look forward to the next edition of the pod. You know, everybody else, I hope this finds everybody well. Get out and enjoy the games. Thank you all.